Welcome. I'd like to call the Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development Committee to order for Wednesday, March 5th. I'd like to thank members for being here, and we're going to have some discussion on a couple of major telecommunications bills. But we would like to start out, we have some special guests with us today from the Minnesota Milk Producers, and I think since obviously this is the Ag Committee, we'd like to have them come forward and just give us a brief overview of what they've been doing today, and then we're going to move into some reports and then obviously two bills that will be heard a little bit later on during this committee hearing. So with that, I'd like to invite David Ward and David Buck to please come forward and give us a little overview. Perfect, right there. Welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you, Senator, and members of the committee. And like it was mentioned, today is Dairy Day at the Capitol, and we're celebrating the robust dairy industry that Minnesota enjoys. I represent Cooperative Network, and we co-sponsor Dairy Day at the Capitol with Minnesota Milk Producers, and it's been a very good partnership because not only in this event, but out in rural Minnesota, we need that partnership of the dairy producers that produce the product, but our co-op processors that add value to the product and process that product. Just a couple brief issues that we're concerned about. One is the warehouse tax that was put into place last session of the legislature. It has not been implemented yet, but it's caused some concerns for some of our members, especially on how the what would be the tax of food products like cheese and whey, dried whey, and will they be charged in the warehouse. So I guess we would appreciate now that we found some new money in the Minnesota coffers, that if we could work on maybe repealing that warehouse tax, and for our farmer members, if we could repair the farm and equipment repair sales tax too, that would be very helpful to the economy of rural Minnesota and make us competitive not only in making profits for our farmer members, but also competitive with the industries in other states. Last session, you also passed commissioned a study for the DLR to look at business property, including that property used in dairy processing. And I guess we worked very well with the Department of Revenue and appreciated the diligence they did in that study. Now that they've come out, they've made some recommendations. We have endorsed one of those recommendations that will need legislative approval, so we're just kind of putting it on the record that we're going to be here working with the Minnesota legislature to make sure that the avenue or the results of the DOR study does not further add tax burden to our dairy processors. So with that, thank you for what you do for rural Minnesota. And
Mr. Chair and members, my name is David Buck. I'm on the board of the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. My wife, Ann, and I and our family operate a 500-cow dairy in Goodhue County, and with the help of farm business management, we are in the process of transitioning to the next generation, and we have two sons, so far two of them, and that are interested in. We're here with a large contingent of dairy farmers today, and we also brought some treats here. If you haven't gotten any, there's yogurt and milk here aplenty, so don't be shy about grabbing some at some point in time. I will touch on four priority concerns of our members. As always, we're very interested in the state feedlot permitting process, and last year the Pollution Control Agency proposed some amendments to the feedlot rules. Our association was involved in that process, and the administrative law judge sided with producers on some of the proposed changes. The MPCA is now at the stage where they will be presenting their final package of proposed rule changes, and we hope that the agency takes into account the recommendations from the administrative law judge, and we'll try to keep you informed as the final rules are published. We support a competitive sales tax policy, as Dave mentioned. We're very much in favor of repealing the sales tax on equipment repair services. It's a tax that probably hits unfairly on beginning producers and possibly smaller producers. Beginning producers usually are operating equipment that is used and have higher repair bills, and so they would be taxed more than someone who's buying new equipment, and therefore it actually is hitting the people that can least afford to pay it. We're pleased that the forecast came out as strong as it did, and we would encourage you to use some of that to repeal the sales tax provision. We also support a competitive overtime pay policy. Currently, we operate on a 48-hour work week in agriculture, and after 48 hours, we pay time and a half. There's an initiative by the administration to drop last year to drop that to 40 hours, and we strongly support keeping it at 48 hours. Minnesota is already an island in the upper Midwest when it comes to that policy. All of our neighboring states operate under the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act that provides an exemption for agriculture that so they have no overtime pay. So it's an issue of being competitive with our neighbors. We don't propose eliminating it, but we don't want to go backwards and become even less competitive relative to our neighboring states. This issue will probably be addressed in the pending minimum wage legislation, and we have communicated with some of you on this issue and hope the conference committee arrives at a final proposal which retains the 48-hour work week for ag workers. Finally, we are continuing to work with the Dairy Research Training Teaching and Consumer Education Authority. The board members for this authority have been in place for approximately 1 year. They are working to determine the mission of the dairy research facility, where it might be located, and who the partners will be in this research and education effort. Clearly, there will be a need to be a close partnership with the University of Minnesota and Minsky system. Milk producers themselves are taking an active role, and we are looking to identify interest and support from the dairy industry to support the research efforts. In recent years, we have seen a decline in the number of dairy farms in Minnesota, but we have been able to maintain the number of cows in the state. Obviously, this is because, in general, the herds are getting larger. This is maintaining the cow numbers is fundamentally important to our state economy and not just for rural areas. Milk processing takes place throughout the state, including a lot of it in metro areas. In a study undertaken by the Department of Agriculture in 2010, it was determined that every cow in the state generates approximately $25,000 of economic activity. This includes production of feed, veterinary services, investment in facilities, and processing milk into a variety of products. With 460,000 cows in the state, the dairy sector generates $11.6 billion of economic activity, and it all starts with a cow. I guess that's all I have. We thank you for your support and look forward to working with you in the future, and make sure you grab some dairy treats. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ward and Mr. Buck. I think you have a really good story to tell. Obviously, this is a very important industry in the state of Minnesota, and I think members heard your concerns loud and clear. Are there any questions for these two? Senator Dames?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize, gentlemen, for stepping in late, but just a question. If you, and maybe you outlined this before I got here, but can you tell me what the economic impact would be to your industry if you lose that 48-hour conformity or 48-hour exemption? Any idea what that might be? How many dollars?
Kind of hard to put a pinpoint on the dollars, but what was indicated is that, you know, Minnesota already is an island. And so Minnesota producers are already at a competitive disadvantage with producers in other states as it is with overtime. This would make them even more so at a competitive disadvantage. When the margins are tight, every dollar counts. And so things like sales taxes on, you know, equipment repairs and warehousing and, you know, overtime pay all eats into that margin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions, members? If not, thank you very much, gentlemen. Enjoy the rest of your day here at the Capitol.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to hear, we're fortunate today to have Margaret Anderson Kelleher, the chair of the Governor's Task Force on Broadband here, and she's going to give us a presentation on that report and recommendations from that work group. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My lucky day to follow the dairy producers. I still think I remain as the only person to serve as Speaker of the House who's also been a dairy princess, so from Blue Earth County. I have to say, what's the strategy here? Boy, you keep this room hot. Princess Kay's butterhead would just melt to pieces, so. Well, I'm glad to be with you today, and I'm going to keep our report relatively brief. I believe this is our third report to the governor, and we send it to you as well as the policymakers for the state of Minnesota. It is a report that has built on the other reports, and I want to first thank the governor's office. The governor's task force on broadband serves at the pleasure of the governor, and we have had support from the governor's office, from both of the departments that we've worked with, both the Department of Commerce as well as now the Department of Employment and Economic Development. So we appreciate their support greatly. They help make sure that the task force is staffed and that we can do the things that we do. We all serve as volunteers in the role of the task force. And I want to share with you our policy recommendations today. But I think it's also always good to know where do we stand as a state. And right now, this is what the report looks like. If you don't have a physical copy, I know that Senator Schmidt would be happy to get you one. But you can also download it off of the Connect Minnesota website, the Department of Commerce website, and I think Deed, almost there, but not quite there. And so I want to share with you that we set, actually while I was in the legislature, we set state broadband goals. We said that all Minnesotans should be connected to broadband. They should be connected at a speed of 10 megabits up, down and 5 megabits up. And that should be a statewide goal. This little chart shows you the progress that's being made. We also said that that goal should be reached, and you all have supported that. That goal should be reached by 2015. So as you can see, there has been some significant growth in where we've come from. In April of 2011, it was a little over 56% of households. And by October of 2013, we are about at 71% of those households. I think that 74% represents the inclusion of the wireless services, so that accounts for about 3% of connection in the state, more or less. The percent of growth has been about 18%. This was aided in part by having some federal dollars that came into the state and was working on building projects with the ARRA funding across the state. But what this means is that to date, 500,000 Minnesotans still are not connected to broadband. And of that 500,000 Minnesotans who are not connected to broadband, most of them, a large percentage of them, are in rural Minnesota. And we feel that this is why we really have to take action. This map's a little hard to read right here, but if you downloaded it to your desktop or to your iPad, you would be able to go in and look at the different areas of the state in terms of the broadband inventory. Like I said, the problem remains. There's also not everyone is at the speed that we would like to see across the state. And that is more shared urban and rural, but tends to be, again, more of a rural issue for rural residents of our state. Now, you might be wondering, what difference does it make? What does it make to meet the state broadband speed goals, 10 and 5? And so I'd like to give you a couple of examples. First of all, a need example that we heard on the task force this year. When we were out, we try to travel around, visit. We often visit libraries as the space that we meet in. And we heard this story from the State Library Association. It is not uncommon for librarians to come to work in the morning and notice that there are cars all over the parking lot of their library property. And particularly, one librarian told us the story of seeing a guy with a pickup truck. The back of the pickup truck is open. There's a student on a laptop, and there's an adult sitting nearby. And the librarian went over and said, what are you doing? And the adult said, I am proctoring a national test that needs to be taken, and this is the only way we can get a high enough connection speed in the area is that we are using your Wi-Fi from inside the building out here on the corner of the building this morning to do this. And it's a common scene across Minnesota to come to a library parking lot and see that people are actually using the Wi-Fi, the broadband connection speed, in the parking lot. The other thing, what does it do? I have a junior in high school. I happen to live in the metro area, but it is not uncommon for 2 to 3 times a week for her to come home and say, my assignment for tonight is to watch a video that's related to the content of what she's studying. Right now she's in AP European History, so there's often something related to that. Take notes on the video that I've watched and be prepared for the classroom the next day. Now think about that in terms of the 500,000 Minnesotans who are not connected. And their student, their child, cannot go home to their home and be able to connect and do their homework in the same way. So then they have to either have extended hours at school or at the library or in some other way. I also just want to address one other thing. Although we've made good progress on wireless as well around the state, some of you may hear people say that, well, won't that solve the problem? And we do think there's great progress with wireless. Younger people, more diverse groups of people adopt wireless more quickly even than broadband speeds. But we do have some challenges with data caps and pricing. And that, I think, is something to keep in mind in rural Minnesota, that yes, it's possible that that student may be able to connect through a wireless hotspot. But to watch a video, if any of you have done that and blown a data cap, you will know that that can be a very expensive prospect. So I think it's important to just know that there are many different types of solutions, but there is no substitute for being able to have a broadband speed at your home or at your business. And we think that that's the important takeaway from this. So in terms of what is happening with Minnesota, Minnesota right now has 78% of its households that subscribe to a broadband service. 62% of low-income Minnesotans subscribe. 60% of disabled adults subscribe. That may be surprising to some people, but it's really a lifeline and a link to be able to get services, to work, to do all sorts of things. 49% of seniors. We do see a generational gap on broadband, as well as then parsing that out, 32% of low-income seniors subscribe to broadband in the state of Minnesota. We have studied the issue now for 3 years, and we really think that now is the time for some bold moves. If we have a hope of getting closer to the 2015 border-to-border, everyone having broadband goal, which I think is a challenge to meet by 2015, being that it's now 2014, but we can still make significant progress towards that. One of the things that we have learned by studying the issue is that private providers, as well as private providers even partnering with a public entity, have a challenge when it comes to not just the last mile, but the middle mile, even in many rural areas. The return on investment is not a positive when you're talking about going from an average, I think, the folks who are coming up here who are representing the telecom industry or the cable industry could tell you exactly, but it's roughly around the $3,000 to $3,500 mark that is usually the cost of providing the broadband connection. And what is happening is in some cases, in some places, that can skyrocket into $9,000, $10,000, $11,000. If we wait for natural growth and don't intervene, then we are going to continue to have market failure in this regard. And that's where it means that we have a unique role to recommend to you some intervention that will really help those 500,000 Minnesotans connect in partnership, working in partnership with private industry. And so we recommend this year that there be a $100 million broadband fund established in the state. We don't say exactly what that should look like. We don't specify the detail, although we do think matching funds are important in this, and that you could actually leverage those dollars, not just doubling them, but probably even tripling or quadrupling them, depending on how the legislature and the Department of Employment and Economic Development would write the grant program. Some people may wonder, well, is this uncommon? But there are many funds at DEED that do this sort of thing. There's the Minnesota Investment Fund, there's others. And I've also heard a concern that maybe the list isn't fully developed. How do we know what the need is? This isn't exactly like bonding where people come forward with a list of projects and want you to help them on it. But I think that one of the problems is we don't have this sort of fund in the state. And therefore, once you create the fund, we will very quickly know about the need and what the desire is in terms of being able to partner on this sort of endeavor. We do know, and I know that you're going to hear soon from our first ever governor-appointed director of the Office of Broadband, Dana McKenzie, who was a member of the task force before being appointed, and she knows her stuff really well. She can tell you a lot about what's happening in the state, but she did share with me that there are at least over 70 communities that are right now exploring what their needs are on broadband. And I think that should tell you a lot about what the need is. We also think repealing the sales tax exemption on telecommunications capital equipment is a very important move. Our task force actually has recommended expanding that sales tax exemption the past 2 years to include things like fiber. And we were not happy and pleased that it actually was repealed last year. So I think this is another key part. It has it actually has a multiplier effect. You would think it would drag down the build out in the state by 7%, roughly the sales tax, but there is a new study that shows in two different cases it can range from 12% to around 16% drag in terms of what the investment will be in the state. And so we think that's an important change, and we know that there are a number of bills moving through the legislature to do that. We also think that the Office of Broadband needs a little bit more funding to be able to operate effectively, and so we think it's a wise investment of a little bit of dollars to make sure more Minnesotans are connected. The map that I showed you has been made possible through the work of Connected Nation and Connect Minnesota. They have very skilled analysts who are able to collect in a neutral way. The providers are willing to provide data to them, which has not been always the case, and that's how we're able to really see and track where we are today. The Connected Minnesota, Connected Nation money is due to run out early next year, and we think that an investment in the continued mapping would be important. That could be directed through the Office of Broadband as well. We also have talked a lot to school districts and librarians. The superintendent of the Deer River Schools is on our task force. We've had the State Library Association in, and we also think it is, as a measure between getting service to every Minnesotan, a good investment as well is telecommunications equity aid to libraries and schools for access. We also think there needs to be modernization. In this unsession, modernization and the telecom laws are important, and we think that you will have a pretty thorough review of those coming forward. But we do want to support the work to modernize the telecom laws, especially Minnesota State Statute 237. We also think that it is important to help low-income Minnesotans connect. There are a couple of really great programs that exist already. Both Comcast and CenturyLink have programs where, through their federal certifications, provide usually somewhere around $10 service a month They often partner that with low-cost equipment, something like a $100 computer, and they can really help families get connected to the internet across the state. The Cable Association as well has individual programs in communities that they participate in. Why is this important, though, and why is it a good investment? It's a good investment because studies show that if low-income people are supported for around 18 months with this sort of support, and then that support eases off, they will pick up the cost themselves. They see how important it is. You may wonder, well, why is it important? You know, you talked about viewing the homework at home and things like this. People who are connected at high speed to the internet earn $2,500 more per family a year at least. And so it makes a difference in the family income. You're going to talk a lot about helping people get ahead and make a better living. This is a way to help them do that that is fairly cost effective. And then, again, the Regional Library and Telecommunications Aid as well. I think that the important part of this as well is to know where are we headed to in this upcoming year. We are going to be examining a number of issues as a task force. We are going to look at the state speed goals and examine them again. It's been about 4 or 5 years since they were passed, and we just want to make sure that we're current. And then we are also going to be studying advanced and gigabit networks. Some of you have heard about what is happening in places like Kansas City and other places. We want to make sure we're understanding both policy-wise and the effect of what that would do for Minnesotans, the affordability of broadband services as well, the adoption strategies and economic impacts, which is something we've been getting more into and you can read about in the report, mobile broadband, which, as I've told you, is growing among young people and especially communities of color. We want to make sure that we are understanding what, where and how mobile broadband is being deployed, and then cybersecurity on everyone's minds now. And it's also important to be thinking about what's happening in the state of Minnesota in terms of keeping Minnesotans safe and Minnesota business safe as well. So, Mr. Chair, I'm going to stop right there and see if anyone has a question.
Thank you very much for your work and for the presentation. Senator Schmidt?
Well, thank you, Madam Speaker, for joining us today and for helping elevate this issue. I personally consider it to be probably our greatest challenge and greatest opportunity here in Minnesota, a vital infrastructure for the 21st century. I'd love to help put this in perspective for committee members here. When we're talking about the economic opportunity of meeting our goals in Minnesota, if we were to hit 10-5 by 2015, what does that mean to the state of Minnesota in terms of economic return? I'm not sure if the task force has shed any light on that. And also, if you could help put in light, in proper context, how much it's going to cost us to get there and how big of a challenge is in front of us.
Ms. Anderson Kelleher.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Schmidt, and thank you for your work and your championing of the issue. I know you have traveled the state as well and talked to a lot of Minnesotans about what the needs are and what the opportunities are. So there's a couple of things, a couple of ways to look at economic output on this issue. We know just simply connecting Minnesotans at the speed that is outlined in the state statute would bring a significant and tremendous economic return. If that's maximized, and I think this is the work that you're speaking to as well, if people like small businesses had basic training in using Excel spreadsheets, QuickBooks, things like that, it has a multiplier effect of about 10 to 1. So if, let's say, for example, there was a $1 billion economic impact just by connecting the entire state, which I think is about accurate, it could be up to $10 billion in terms of fully maximizing and utilizing what is happening with the broadband. The cost of connecting everyone, it ranges. And our range, I think the upper end is about $3 billion. I know that sounds like a lot. We think that can happen through not all of that money coming from the state of Minnesota, but really leveraging private dollars, leveraging in some cases some local monies that might be available, as well as federal dollars that would be available. And so we think that it's important for the state to begin the fund so that it can be the match. Was that pretty accurate? I'm checking Mr. Chair and Senator Schmidt.
Yeah, Senator Schmidt. Yeah, Madam Speaker, that's consistent with what I've heard in the past, too, and that 10-to-1 return on investment is something I think the Blandin Foundation is commissioned to report that will demonstrate that. And so that's no surprise to my ears. But thank you for that.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? If not, thank you very much for the report. We look forward to working with you this session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for inviting me on behalf of the task force. The task force really has enjoyed visiting around the state and certainly is open to visiting other parts of the state if folks have suggestions for us. So thank you.
Thank you very much. And moving on, we're going to hear from Ms. McKenzie and Ms. Anderson Kelleher talked about it. Last session, we created the new Office of Broadband, and so she's going to come and give us a little report on what's been happening in her new office. So welcome to the committee and proceed whenever you're ready. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you. And I'll keep this brief because it's warm in here. But just briefly also, I would point out that the handout that you received regarding with some background information, Mr. Chair and members, has by county the connectivity levels, and that's very interesting. As I looked at the districts that you all represent, we've got representation from the most well-connected to the least served counties in the state here at the table, and so it might be interesting for you to pick out your own counties from that map. But Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to provide you with an overview of the newly created Office of Broadband Development. Your agenda mentions the review of the annual report submitted by the office on January 15th. Because that deadline arrived about a week after I did, we leaned heavily on the output of the Broadband Task Force report. So I will not spend our time here reviewing what Chair Anderson Kelleher did such a good job of doing just now. So if you do have any specific questions about that report, I would be happy to answer them. As you prepare to discuss several broadband-related proposals this session, it might be most useful to review why the office was created and what our role will be in providing assistance to you for your deliberations, as well as what that role might become should the decision be made to move forward with any of the proposals brought before you. As you may recall, in 2010, the legislature set a series of goals around achieving universal border-to-border broadband access at a level that will prepare our citizens, communities, and businesses to fully participate in the digital economy, both today and into the future. There was also a goal set to achieve a leadership position in broadband use and digital literacy that would set Minnesota apart in its ability to leverage the full benefits of a universally connected society. One principal way those benefits are achieved is through the creation of a platform that will do things such as support the development of a workforce that is more equipped to fill tomorrow's jobs. It will provide an even playing field for businesses all across the state, regardless of their location. And it will also allow for the evolution of efficient new healthcare delivery methods. And it will open new doors for responsive and nimble education reform. And it will also provide tools for us to get serious about reducing redundant government service delivery methods, just to name a few. In 2013, the Office of Broadband was created and charged with working to achieve these goals, along with being tasked to use the new access and skills to help create drive job creation, promote innovation, and expand markets for Minnesota businesses. I came on board in January of this year to lead those efforts. Might want to just review a little bit about what we are doing today and what we've been up to in the last couple of months, just to try to get ourselves tooled up. As you might guess, one of our first tasks is building those relationships that are necessary for this work. We're getting to know all of the groups that have a stake in seeing these goals achieved. Since our start in January, we've met with many legislators to provide broadband-related information and data about these issues. We've talked with and met with at least 8 different provider groups to hear about their needs and issues. We've also talked and visited with the local initiatives throughout the state, and we've begun the dialogue with other state agencies that also have a role to play, including the Department of Commerce, MnDOT, Minute Services, Department of Public Safety, Department of Education representatives, and internal deed divisions that also touch on broadband-related issues such as workforce and community development. We're also gathering information and data, which is the piece you're probably most familiar with. Given the uneven access to broadband around the state, a particular focus of the office today is accurately describing the gaps so that legislators and others are able to make well-informed decisions on where and how to invest resources to eliminate the inequities and achieve the state goals of universal access. We're working with the state's partner, Connect Minnesota, to further refine our views of where these gaps exist, and as evidenced by the maps that you've received today. We're also working with our federal partners to fully articulate and clarify the opportunities to seek federal support for Minnesota broadband projects. The Federal Communications Commission, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Rural Utilities Service, FirstNet, and the President's Connect Ed Initiative all have current programs that will benefit Minnesota communities. Another important effort that is underway is cataloging all of the known community and provider initiatives around the state that are seeking to build better broadband infrastructure in their local areas. I know Margaret used the number 70. Our estimate is closer to 45 at this point in time of community efforts, and both provider-led and community-driven, that are actively engaged at various stages of their development of broadband solutions, from convening local partners to conducting feasibility studies to seeking financing in support of their goals. As this effort becomes more well-known, the calls continue to come into our office, I would say almost daily, to add to the list of those looking for resources to help them achieve their goals. In addition, we're also building the tools for doing this work going forward. As indicated above, one of the most important tools we're building is the network of stakeholders that have a role in this work. As part of that network, we're also reaching out to the broadband offices around the country and inventorying their approaches to these issues. Two areas where we're doing national research right now to help inform Minnesota's discussion are how are the other states handling their data and analysis needs to best target their investments. And the other piece is for those states that are doing infrastructure incentives, what structure are they using and how is that being served up? We are also working on convening a group of experts on broadband adoption and digital literacy issues. We've engaged experts from the provider community, corporations, nonprofits, as well as state and city government representatives to start building a plan for the most effective way for the state to engage in access, adoption, and digital literacy issues for those groups that are still identified as having significant barriers. Another thing the office is tasked with is technical assistance to communities and local groups that are working on broadband access issues. The resources of the office are spread a little thin as we try to stand up the different elements of the office, but we are still able to work with individual communities on specific initiatives. And the piece that we are addressing right now is an opportunity that was recently announced by the FCC called their Rural Broadband Experiments Initiative. And we have worked with Connect Minnesota to create detailed maps of the areas that are eligible for this program and reached out to all of those individual initiatives that I mentioned earlier and provided them with much appreciated tools to help them with their letters of interest for that federal opportunity. And looking forward, if there are 3 things I would hope that you take away from both the task force overview and this very brief introduction to the Office of Broadband Development, it is that there are real economic and social benefits to be realized by the state achieving its broadband goals, and there is demonstrated need for state involvement in achieving these goals. And finally, that this office is not standing still. We're here. We've already assembled many of the tools that we will need to work with our stakeholders to address the gaps and to achieve Minnesota's broadband goals. Mr. Chair, members, I thank you for the opportunity to give you this brief update, and I would be happy to take any questions.
Certainly. Thank you, Ms. McKenzie, and I know that you've been very busy in the brief time you've been there, but obviously doing some very important work. So Senator Bonhoff has a question, then Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McKenzie, when you went over the map with us, I wondered if you were looking at the wireless connectivity, how different would that be from the broadband map?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe the percentage is roughly a difference of 71% versus 78% is the difference of those that qualify for the state goal.
And
so in other words, terrestrial only, wired only would be approximately 71%. And if you add in mobile connectivity that reaches the state's speed goals, we are getting closer to about 78%.
Mr. Chair,
and I just misspoke at 75%. I apologize.
Okay. And then, but would it be the same areas would be having those connectivity issues when we look at wireless as when we look at broadband, or would the map look different from that perspective? Do you have a map that shows that?
We do actually have the map, and from when looking at it at the statewide level, it's difficult to discern a pronounced difference at this stage of the game, because there is just a small number of added at that wireless by adding the wireless. But we do have those maps available and can make them available to anyone who needs to look at them.
Perfect. Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I so appreciate the emphasis on broadband. I know that our economy rides on broadband, and much of everything we do in life rides on high-speed broadband. So I'm very interested in that access issue and also the high speed. And I just have a couple questions. I noticed that the map is 10 up and 6 down, and yet our broadband goal is 10 up and 5 down. And what I'd really like to see is a map that shows what the adoption rates or the subscription rates look like based upon our actual goal, our actual state goal. But I do think, to Senator Bonhoff's point, I think it's very important to include that wireless service as well. And so it'd be really helpful if we had a map that incorporated exactly what our state broadband goal is and included the wireless adopters as well. And I'm wondering, is that something that you can provide?
Mr. Chair.
McKenzie.
Members, very, very good points. And actually, the map in front of you does include both mobile and wireline. This data does include both of those.
Very good.
It is done on a aggregated by county basis. We do have a more spatial map that shows you the same thing. It is a little bit more difficult to discern where the areas of our need are in that format, but we do have that available. And I would just, to your other point, and I'm not going to be able to articulate it clearly, the reason it's 10.6 versus 10.5 has to do with a technical glitch with the federal standards for how they measure these pieces. And at a minimum, we can make that more clearly on the map, known on the map. But this was the best way to represent Minnesota's state goals, which are somewhat different than the federal processes.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe at some point we'll be able to ask the providers what the difference is between 10.5 and 10.6. But I think actually in my area, that might be what they provide is 10.5. So like I'm looking at your map here, and it says that Olmsted County has 34.63% of households served according to our state goals. And I can tell you, I know that's wrong. That is an inaccurate number. And so when I look at something like that on this map, it really makes me wonder about the data that's really producing this. So I think, it's essential that we have access, high-speed broadband. But I think it's really important that we look at the action. So I want to have real confidence in the numbers that we're having here. And maybe there's somebody here from Charter. I don't know. But Charter serves my area. And I think it's a 10.5 area, and so that's what you get. And so everyone who has 10.5, which would be most of the area, isn't represented as having access on this map. And so I think I would really want to see a map that's very accurate to exactly what our goal is. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Would you like to respond, Ms. McKenzie?
Mr. Chair, members, I thank you very much for pointing that out, and I hope that we can have the opportunity to work with you offline to really talk about some of those inaccuracies that you are aware of, because absolutely that's part of our role, is to make sure that this data is accurate and supporting good decision-making.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so the final comment is, I do think that's very important, and maybe not even offline, but I think we don't want to be basing important public policy on what looks like perhaps a map that artificially depresses what our actual subscription rates are to the high-speed broadband. And so I think it's really important that we get the accurate information and then target our resources accordingly. And I just had another question that might be for you or it might be for Ms. Kelleher. And I was wondering about the 22% of Minnesotans who do not have broadband access. And I'm wondering if there's a way to discern why that is they don't have broadband access. Is it that they're not interested? Or I know, you know, my 84-year-old mother-in-law doesn't want broadband. Where on the other hand, my 81-year-old mother does, and she has it. So how do we determine of these 22% who don't have broadband, if I understand that correctly, why that is? Do we have any data on that?
Ms. McKenzie?
Mr. Chair, members, good question. Through the SBI federal program and Connect Minnesota has been engaged to do a household survey annually on these issues, and they do actually have that data broken out. I apologize. I do not have it with me, and we can get that to you, and we will follow up with that. I do know that it ranges from the lack of access, which is actually a very small percentage of that group, to lack of interest. And fear. We've got a number. We probably have about 50% of those that the office would consider addressable reasons: high cost, fear, lack of understanding, access to equipment, those sorts of things. Those are the pieces that we know of that 22% that we believe is significantly addressable. And so we will be having further dialogue within our office about great. Having for future discussions on that issue.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Senator Schmidt?
Well, thank you, Ms. McKenzie, for your hard work here. I know that we asked you to do a lot with the Office of Broadband Development, and I think we're thrilled with the early returns so far. It seems like every time we see each other in a public setting, there's more to-do items added to the list for you. So we'll try to get you the resources you need to do a good job. And I really view your job with the Office of Broadband as essential to breaking silos in government and thinking about broadband in new ways to increase efficiency and just improve quality of life, economic benefit in Minnesota, not to mention connectivity. One thing that's interesting is I've heard that there are concerns with the data and the mapping before, and I think it's important to understand that this is provider data that's coming from our providers in Minnesota who I consider are doing a great job in all corners of the state. And I think that the 10 and 5 item, to my understanding, comes down to reporting. And I don't think that there's trying to be any deception here. It's just that's the way the numbers are reported, and that's the way they're reflected on the map. And, in fact, when I've gone around the state listening to folks in various corners and talking about their access to broadband, I actually get a different perspective that the map overstates access and that there's a lot of cases that look like they're well-served on the map, but, you know, you get a mile outside of town and there are few options for broadband access. So I think what we have here with the data is our best attempt to try to collect data on where we are in Minnesota in meeting our goals and our service levels and reflecting it on this map here. I think we'd all agree it's imperfect, but it's useful in identifying some of the high need areas. And to that end, my question, I'm looking at these areas particularly in yellow that look like they are in a really dire situation. You said that there's over 45 communities around Minnesota that you believe are talking about local initiatives, trying to invest in technology or form partnerships or what have you. I'm curious if you could shed a little bit of light on the information you have on what those conversations are at the local level and what's the fundamental issue behind why we have big pockets of Minnesota that are in yellow on this map that are quite underserved or unserved altogether.
Ms. McKenzie?
Mr. Chair, members, the variety of initiatives and projects are a wide range. Some of the issues that we have on our list are conversations with actual providers who are out in these communities who would like to provide access to these unserved areas, but the ROI does not work for them to be able to put all of the capital on the table. So they are actively seeking assistance in the same way that a number did through the ARRA federal stimulus program. And so we are having discussions to better understand where that barrier, where that gap is, and where the appropriate place to get involved is. We also have communities that are just on the very, very beginning stages, where they have received a call from local businesses. It might be the superintendent. It might be the healthcare institution saying, we would like to get into telemedicine, but we are not able to do that because we don't have that bandwidth out to the last mile, out to the consumer of that service. We would like to start working. We're in a rural Minnesota community, and we would like to start working on flipped classrooms, but we have a significant student population that's not able to access our lessons in that way. And so they are just in the beginning stages of trying to develop that dialogue, so they don't necessarily have a significant partner. But then we have examples like Rock County, who has, I believe, spoken publicly numerous times that they have identified a need that both their citizens and their businesses are not able to achieve adequate access to get done what they need to do. And so they've actually partnered with a private provider and built a financial model that will, with some assistance, will get them the level of service they need.
Okay. You can keep it, Chair.
Yeah. Sanderson Killer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Senator Nelson's point, I just want to say that I think this is when I put up on the slide what we're going to look at this year, and we want to look at whether our state speed goals are appropriate. The 5 and 6 issue is actually one of the issues we need to look at. And if people who maybe were around at the time can remember, there was kind of a rip-roaring fight over 10 and 5 and whether that was the right number or not. And what I'd say is that we would be much better off if we actually were at 10 and 6 for our measurement, because that's how providers are reporting in to the federal government. They don't report in at the 5, and so that's where we struggle to be able to be accurate versus 5 versus 6. So that's one of the things that, you know, we decided that we weren't going to be able to tackle that in just the month we had left in last year, but it is something we want to look at going forward. But however, if in the legislature's wisdom they wanted to match that up with the way that the federal numbers are reported, that would clean up a little bit of this problem. And every year I've come to present the task force report, there has been this concern about 5 and 6. And so I think it would be much better if we were consistent with how providers have to report to the federal government their speeds, and then we would be much more accurate in our maps.
Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I really appreciate that, and I just think it's so important. So this map actually shows that people that have 10 and 5 are not included on this map, if I'm understanding correctly.
Well, they would, Mr.
Not,
Chair.
Yes.
They would be included because this is up to 10 and 6. So it's just that if we were measuring it, it's likely the percentage of connection statistically is a little bit higher, and we do that in the report. We can show that, but it's not as easy as if it were at 10 and 6, because, you know, at 10 and 6, you're actually including those who are connected at 10 and 5, and so they're in there, but it would actually show a little bit higher connection rate across the state, but not a ton more connection rate, just based on what we know. It would not push us over 80%, for example.
So thank you. Senator Olson. So thank you. So I do look forward to that. And I don't know, what is the difference? What would I feel between the difference as a user of the Internet between 5 down and 6 down, beyond the videos? I think we talked about the videos, but I know these other things are very important too, whether it be the YouTubes for the flipped learning or the telemedicine. And what's required for those type of issues, the flipped learning, YouTubes, or the telemedicine? Does it make a difference if it's 10-5 or 10-6?
Ms. McKenzie?
Chair, members. I would have to say that I would defer to Margaret's point that this is one of the issues that the task force is going to take a look at. But to your point specifically, there probably is not a large measurable difference between 5 and 6.
What I would feel, excuse me,
sir, no,
what I would experience as a
I'm
user,
sorry, what you
I
would,
couldn't
what
tell
would,
a difference.
Okay. How you would feel,
yes.
The experience would feel. Mm-hmm. There is not a large difference. And to that point, the difference between the state goal and the map is not one to try and push that envelope at all. It is a data and statistics thing only. And so we look forward to revisiting that issue and getting that cleared up so that we don't keep getting snagged on that.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you both very much. That was very helpful, very informative. And again, we apologize. Due to some of the capital restoration, this room has been extremely warm. So thank you very much. Next, we're going to hear from the Minnesota Broadband Alliance on their study relating to the sales tax exemption. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Oxley. I am special counsel with the Mendoza Law Firm. We represent the Minnesota Cable Communications Association. And the Cable Association, in conjunction with the Minnesota Telephone Alliance and the CTIA Wireless Association, sponsored a study to look at the economic effects that would flow from repeal of the sales tax exemption. Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm delighted to be here this afternoon. I haven't been this warm since August, so it's a great change. The reason why I'm here presenting this, I'm a lawyer, but before I went into the business of making everybody happy, I was an economist, where I helped make everybody appreciate the dismalness of the dismal science. But I've done econometric work in the past. I've done studies like the ones that are being presented here and discussed. So that's how I got this job. This cold weather has removed Minnesota from many economists' must-visit list, at least temporarily. And since I live here, I was available. Spoiler alert, if you haven't looked at the study yet, I'll tell you that it concludes that taxing telecom investment is going to have bad effects. Dr. Katz is an economist who's put together a study to try to estimate, well, what are those effects from repealing the tax exemption? How will that affect Minnesotans? How will it affect the level of investment? How will it affect employment in Minnesota overall? And how will it affect the state of the economy, the gross national product of Minnesota? Just to headline a little bit the conclusions, so you want to follow through with how Dr. Katz got there. The study concludes that within 2 years of repealing the tax exemption, that is, restoring sales tax on telecommunications equipment, the state will lose $153 million in investment. It'll lose over 3,300 jobs. And it will lose over $700 million in total economic output. Those are pretty significant numbers. So let's look at how Dr. Katz came up with those numbers and what underlies them. Basically, he deployed three different methodologies in his study. The first one, he looked at historical data gathered from telecom and cable TV firms in Minnesota from 2006 through 2010. And that study told us how large Minnesota's telecom investment was over those years and how it compared to national figures. We're a little bit below the national level, but our rate of investment in telecom equipment was increasing throughout this period. To determine what effect telecom investment has on other parts of the economy, Dr. Katz looked at what the Bureau of Labor Statistics in the country calls input-output tables, but they measure to get an additional unit of some kind of output what's required to produce it. For example, if you want to produce more cars, you need more steel. If you need more steel, you may need more mines, may need more railroads. If you need more railroads, they need more steel too. So an input-output table is able to track all of the interdependencies in our modern industrial economy and tell us, well, if we increase telecom investment by some number, what happens? If we decrease it by some amount, what happens? So in doing this work in Minnesota, Dr. Katz discovered, and it doesn't really surprise anyone, but interest rate or taxing telecom investment is going to decrease telecom investment, period. As to how much it's going to do that, well, let's first consider what kinds of investment go on in telecommunications and cable TV. There are really three basic categories, if you think about it. The first we could call maintenance investment. If the tree falls on the line to your house and knocks it down, that's got to get replaced. If a converter box in a central office goes up in smoke, that's got to be replaced. Investment that maintains service to the community is pretty darn insensitive to changes in the sales tax rate. It's pretty darn insensitive to almost anything. If the system breaks, we got to restore it and put it into use again. Another category investment, the second one out of three, is investment in the network that sort of fills it out. For example, if a new building goes up someplace, it's going to need service. You have to provide service to it. Many of our companies have legal obligations to provide service to any building in their service territory. So that kind of investment really has to take place. Sales tax, whether it's there or not, doesn't have that much an effect on it. The third category of investment is where the tax makes a big difference. And this is investment in modernizing the network. Because you're improving the network, people aren't put out if you're not doing it. They're getting the same services they always got. You don't have that same immediate need. It can be postponed. As well, network modernization, you can choose to put that in Minnesota, or you could choose to put it in North Dakota, or you could put it in Wisconsin. It can go different places. Unlike the first two categories of investment, which have to happen in Minnesota, that third one, modernization, does not. It's very mobile, and it's very sensitive to taxes. Okay, so let me jump into his analysis of how telecom investment affects the economy. First, he says there's a direct effect. When you build infrastructure, you buy stuff from other companies, and you employ people to put it in place. That activity generates incomes. Those incomes are spent on a variety of things, and so other producers get a benefit from that too. Dr. Katz calls that the direct effect of telecom investment. The other effect of telecom investment is that it is a productivity enhancer for people. If you're at home, having a good broadband speed means you can stream movies. It means you can commute to work from home. It may mean you can much more efficiently plan other expenditures by doing research. It really provides benefits in the home front in excess of the cost paid for it. Among businesses, it has a really big effect. Businesses can transmit data more rapidly. They can produce it more rapidly. They can make decisions with better information. So that kind of effect he calls an indirect effect, and it too is quite significant. Dr. Katz found that over the 5 years from 2006 to 2010, over $5 billion was invested in telecommunications investment. That investment supported annually over 110,000 jobs. About a quarter of those jobs were directly in telecom services, doing that network construction and fill-in kind of stuff I mentioned. About one quarter of that increase came from companies supplying inputs to the telecom and cable TV companies. And another half came from the increased spending through households as a result of the spending of other entities. Dr. Katz then did a model that looked at how investment in telecom equipment is related to the economic health of Minnesota, the demographics of its population, which he did by looking at people over 60, percentage of population over 60, percentage of population under 30. He looked at the fact that telecom investment decisions are made in certain events kind of slowly. What you invested in last year has an effect on what you did this year and may have an effect on what you do next year. So he had to incorporate time into his model as well. And his conclusions of his study was that from 2006 to 2010, if we had reversed things and not had the sales tax exemption, we would have lost $57 million of investment immediately. Over a longer run, we would have lost $100 million worth of investment. Immediately, we would have lost 1,300 jobs. Over a longer run, over 3,300 jobs. And immediately, we would lose about $300 million in output, $700 million over the long run. Now, as legislators, you want to examine the costs of a policy change and the benefits that flow from it. Dr. Katz has really presented the cost side of the analysis. He says if we don't repeal the sales tax, we'll live in a world that looks less wealthy, employs fewer people, and is less productive than if we do. In light of the temperature and the time, I'll stop talking here, and I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Mr. Oxley. Are there any questions for the witness? If not, thank you very much for reporting to us. Okay, next we're going to hear two proposals that reform and modernize the way the state regulates telecommunications, and I want to thank Commissioner Rothman for being very patient. Members, just so you know, we're not going to take action on these bills today, but I thought it was important that I gave you some background on this stuff. And so first we'll hear Senate File 2218, and Commissioner, if you're ready, come on up. This is from the Department of Commerce. We've been in discussions with the department about this topic and asked them to bring us their recommendations for reform, and that's what will be represented in this bill. And then following the commissioner, Senate File 584 was the industry's recommendations that they've been working on for quite some time, and we'll hear some testimony on that. But again, Commissioner, thank you for your willingness to be here today and your patience, and proceed whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be here. Again, I echo the prior witnesses' testimony. It feels great to be in here, almost like a sauna. You want to run outside and jump in the cold snow, but anyway, I greatly appreciate the chance to come down and to present on Senate File 2218, which is the department's bill on modernizing and consumer protections for telecommunications. As committee members, you know, the department represents consumer interests. We are responsible at the department to regulate the process to ensure that Minnesota has reliable telecommunication services and at a reasonable rates. You know, and you do know the legislative history is that last session there was a bill or bills proposals that reduced the state's regulatory authority, and the department felt that it was unnecessary. Our perspective was that we would take a look at our laws, take a look at the current state of regulation, and to come forward with what we thought was a balanced approach, keeping in mind a few things. In our mind, modernization does not mean complete deregulation. While we agree that Chapter 237 needs to come into the 21st century, and we have some of those ideas throughout here, that should not come at the expense of important consumer protections. And then as you we all know where telecommunications, as you heard from the prior testifiers here on broadband, you're well aware of the fact that the pace of change in telecommunications is exceptionally fast moving. The industry has changed from when we were kids, from even 10 years ago, and where they'll be in the future. And our laws have not kept pace. And therefore, the department is seeking changes to ensure that the laws stay in place to protect Minnesota consumers, but at the same time maintain a fair and competitive marketplace for the folks that are regulated by the Department of Commerce. And as you'll see, I'll walk through some very, at a very high level, some of our proposals. I thought it would be best, instead of a section by section, having done this so many times, that I'd focus on themes and the high and important pieces of what we're dealing with so that you get a sense of what all this means in a very sort of nutshell fashion. There are three primary themes in the bill. One is consumer protection pieces, some changes to enhance protections that are important. I'll talk about those in a minute. Also, modernization, where we are lightening, simplifying, and improving the regulatory process so that it's easier and not as onerous as it used to be, and it's in our statutes to be as it's written. And then finally, some of the unsession items. These are items which, Mr. Chair, we had already thought of before and as we were developing the unsession bill. There's a little bit of overlap, but they're not the same, but there's a significant amount of it. And then for members, when you look at the bill, you'll see that the repealer, and we can talk about it a little later, has all of the language that we're getting rid of. So you can see quite a bit. We didn't add up all of the words and give you a total, but there's a significant amount of change and elimination of obsolete bills. So let me first turn to the consumer protection area. There are a few important things that we think that need to be maintained in the regulatory sphere, but also some things that need enhancement. The first and at the top of the list, and you may have already experienced this or had information from your own constituents. The top one of the top priorities for us is to focus and find a solution, or at least another tool to help with solving call completion problems in rural and greater Minnesota. Addressing the rural call completion issue is an important imperative. It's a public safety concern as well as economic issue for many small businesses in greater Minnesota that lose hundreds of calls. They're losing thousands of dollars and reportedly millions of dollars in business because calls are not being completed to be from their customers, from family members. So if you could imagine, you live in greater Minnesota and your family calls you up, and it's simply this. The person calling you is listening to the phone. The phone will ring and ring and ring and ring. When you hear that, when I hear that, I think that somebody's they're on the other line talking to somebody else they can't get over, or they're not home or something of that nature or whatever. Well, these are false rings that are being sent through by intermediate carriers, by unknown carriers. And so when a caller's calling, they believe that there's nobody at the other end, when in fact the call there's at the home or at the business, the phone's not even ringing. And so these are false calls. They're false ringtones. And we don't believe that the current regulatory tools that are in place to stop that. So what we have done is drafted some protections. The issue has continued to resurface, and we think that this will address some of them. These sections in the bill are needed to be able to identify where the call is coming from and the reason for the drop call. Currently, wholesale transport providers are not defined in statute. They're unknown. And as I've said, they're shrouded in the unknown, and we need to have more transparency. So the three primary sections here are Section 7, which defines a wholesale transport provider. This is currently not defined and is a key for this new call completion statute, so that's the purpose of that section. The substantive provisions in Section 18 and 19 are the interstate call routing, and we prohibit certain practices. This establishes a call completion statute, and it prohibits the practice of not completing calls to these areas of the state. And then we also, in Section 19, develop a registration requirement. Very simple, straightforward. If you're a wholesale transport provider, you would register, and then that way we would know who these companies are and have access to that transparency. So that's the primary purpose of those and the reason it has risen to the top of the list and why we believe it's imperative for the legislature to address this and give us these additional authorities for consumer protection. Second of all, we have the Section 16 has a consumer billing standardization and simplification requirement. It's just straightforward. Tell us what's in the bill. As you have seen and publicly the governor has announced, we're all about simplifying it, making it easy for consumers to see what they're being billed for. And this does that by simplifying the telephone bills and brings transparency to those charges, help consumers understand and compare costs between their telephone companies. We believe that, of course, it's important to have these plain language things for our consumers. In that way, we bring some transparency to the billing practices to make sure that people understand their charges. The next bucket is in consumer protection is Section 17, which is this discontinuance for non-payment section, and it provides and governs disputes and disconnections over disconnections between telephone companies. The language is pretty straightforward and simple, and it sets up a procedure for the resolution of disputes between those companies. What will happen is there will be a fight, there will be disruption in the reliability of service, and what this does is give us a way to arbitrate or, you know, mediate these disputes so that we don't have the impacts on our customers and that, so that they're protected. Before I move off this section on consumer protection, let me just say we also include what we think is from a core perspective of the department and the definition what is basic service. And one of the fundamental building blocks for this, for our department's regulation in this bill is to define it so that the department maintains some core regulation over customers and businesses, and those are found in Section 1 and then well as in Section 2 of the bill. Those are the primary things that you'll find in, under and the top priorities for the department in this. I'd also say that what's also in statute in terms of consumer protection are things that we would like to see maintained in the statute. We've looked thoroughly and carefully at those things and feel that what we've left in statute is critical imperative for consumer protection for Minnesota. With these consumer protection pieces, we also believe and do understand and appreciate the need for modernization. That Minnesota's telephone statutes were written in 1905, 1915. You know, it's very clear from our perspective that some of these statutes are just completely obsolete. And there's when, for example, the governor said, let's think about unsession ideas, we asked staff to do that and looked at it, and one of the first things that popped up was the fact that if you don't read the statutes, but Minnesota has regulatory authority. I have the regulatory authority over telegraph companies and where all the telegraph lines go. Well, yeah, at one point in time, telegraph regulation was absolutely critical. Maybe in some portions of Canada they still have some telegraph, but not in Minnesota. So those statutes are completely obsolete, and in the age of broadband, we do not obviously need those regulatory statutes at all. But substantively, in terms of our rate regulation, and we've had the conversation over the last few years in terms of, well, what is important and what isn't. Minnesota, as the department has looked at, the Minnesota Department of Commerce feels it's imperative to maintain some of the rate, at least notice and information for customers and for the department to take a look at rate increases most significantly. So what we've done is, in Section 11, we've modified the rate cases and we've eliminated rate case regulation, the fundamentals of it, but replaced it with a lighter version of it, which is simply, if you're going to increase rates, give us notice, give us the department notice, give everyone notice. Then there's an opportunity for comment and period in the Public Utilities Commission to take a look if they're contested. But what it does is it will streamline and eliminate what would have been, or it has been, all of that structured rate regulation that's in the statutes. So those, and just for the for your background on this, the department has not really had a significant rate case since 2000. It's just one of those things on the telephone side. So what we've done is tried to maintain sort of a streamlined approach to this, a lighter form of regulation, if you will, and one we think is critical to help in the event that there's unnecessary, unjustified, and exorbitant rate increases to be able to protect Minnesotans in the public interest. The next section is 12, which modifies tariff requirements. It eliminates tariffs for all but the basic customers and wholesale customers so that we at least maintain those core services. And it, but it also provides an opportunity to contest tariff changes. At a minimum, the customers and department must be notified of a rate increase, and this is relatively similar to what you've seen in other proposals. In Section 20, we have certification and registration. It simplifies these provisions, streamlining the process for new companies moving into the state. Again, it's it makes things lighter. Companies will no longer have to prove they will not harm the public by entering into the state. Rather, it'll be up to the Public Utilities Commission to determine that, to require that the PUC certify to the state that there will be no harm, and then an application process for the new company to submit to the PUC, to us to take a look at. And if it doesn't make sense, there's an opportunity to make an issue if there is any issue whatsoever. Again, so it's a lighter regulation and one we think modernizes that provision as well. So then we get into what we would consider sort of the on-session, again, some modernization efforts. We modernized the statute, basically the core jurisdictional statute that references our jurisdiction, but also had included railroad and express companies in it to eliminate some of that. Section 10 deletes an old rulemaking language on wire crossing or paralleling utility lines. This dates back to 1925, and the department has never implemented this provision, so it's completely something that's unnecessary and obsolete. And then, again, telling you the story that we have, we think it's unnecessary to keep some of this. The last category, let me just highlight some of the repealers. Again, if you look at the bill, it contains, I don't know how many, it's the end, it's 16 pages of statute that are being deleted. All of the provisions in the section are either obsolete or are replaced with other sections, so things that we've included in our proposal. Some of them would be contingent on making these changes. So if you go with the department's bill, these other ones are unnecessary. The sections vary from obsolete references, again, to the old railroad and express company lines that regulations that we have, and the rates of depreciation on telephone companies' property that was enacted in 1915, and from discontinuing the annual legislative report on telegraph lines and regulations enacted way back in 1905. Those are the highlights that gives you a sense of our thoughts on modernizing regulation, Mr. Chair. And again, in the interest of time and heat and all that, I'm happy to stand for questions and go into greater detail.
Certainly. Commissioner, I just want to thank you. I know that you and your staff have put a lot of time and energy into this, and obviously I think all the members around the table are interested to make sure that we have those consumer protections. And if we can modernize or take some statutes off the book, that certainly would be important. Do members have questions for Commissioner Rothman? Senator Schmidt.
Commissioner, thank you for joining us today. Appreciate your hard work. I don't think this is mentioned in your bill here, but I just wanted, since you're at the podium or at the microphone here, to share with the committee just a little bit of a primer on the role of competitive local exchange carriers in the provision of broadband services in Minnesota. And if you could just take a couple of minutes just to kind of bring us up to speed. I know that's a discussion point, I think, in the next bill ahead.
Yeah. Well,
Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Schmidt. It's an important piece of all of the broadband, and my sense is that in order for broadband to go border to border, it's one of the initiatives of or goals of the administration. It's a goal of the public policy that there needs to be you know, a place for opportunity for telephone carriers, the intermediate carriers, and those that you're talking about to have. My sense is that it's we're willing to have a continued conversation, to have discussion about thoughts about those things. We don't particularly focus on it here, but at the same time, our overriding goal would be to maximize, as yours, broadband, making broadband available as far as it can. There are issues, of course, between various providers, different ways in doing it, and how much access you can get through these things. And I mean, our goal would be to be able to maximize that while maintaining the regulatory authority that we have.
Thank you very much. I know that you've been working hard with all the stakeholders, too, so hopefully we can come to some kind of an agreement. But thank you very much for being here, and again, thanks for your hard work on this bill. Appreciate your time
great.
Today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next, we're going to hear Senate File 584. This is the industry's recommendations or their bill that's coming forward. So I'd ask Brent Christensen, the CEO of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance, to come to the table. There he is. And then tell us a little bit about your proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before I get into that, if it would be all right with you, I'd like to clear up something from that Senator Bonhoff and Senator Nelson had about the mapping. Okay. Would that be okay?
Sure. Go ahead. Yep.
I talked with Ms. Anderson Kelleher when she was leaving, and she got it turned around. The map that you have has the download and upload minimums that they show and more. So the 10 megabits download and the 6 megabit upload does not include 5. In your case, a representative from Connect Minnesota is here, and he told me that Charter offers 4 meg upload. So what that means to you is they're all getting 10 meg down, so you can stream the same, you can download everything, music, all that stuff the same. The upload speed is a little different. So in your case, if you moved that needle from 6 down to 4, that would change your map in your county completely. Mm-hmm. So that it's all about where you put that and where you put that needle, and it's I don't know that it makes such a big difference on the on the upload speed as much as consumers needing the download speed, but that's a whole nother deal.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, I would like to make a few comments about Commerce's bill because it fits into our bill, and I plan on talking about this not section by section, but more of a concept and where
Perfect.
We are. And first of all, I'm Brent Christensen with Minnesota Telecom Alliance, and we're a trade organization that represents 46 independent telecom providers throughout the state of Minnesota, predominantly the rural areas. And on the Commerce Bill, I want to make it clear, first of all, that we completely support their efforts to deal with call completion. We've been dealing with this call completion for over 4 years, and our members and the customers we serve are on the receiving ends of these cases. MTA members have lost customers because they're not receiving calls. In one case, we had an MTA member company that received a bill from a tire shop in their serving area for $50,000 of perceived lost business because they didn't get the calls. The public switch telephone network, or PSTN, is extremely complicated, and call routing goes through several carriers from the time the call is originated to its final destination. And I could spend the next several hours, which I'm sure you'd all love in this heat, diagramming how call routing works, but the bottom line is that we can only deliver the calls that we receive. In the bill in its current form, a company that receives the call to deliver to their customer has the same responsibilities as the originating carrier. That just isn't feasible. And again, we can only terminate the calls that we receive. The second issue that we have with this bill in its current form has to do with putting the Department of Commerce's and the Commission's phone numbers on landline telephone bills. And we have several issues with this. First of all, our goal is to answer customer questions and resolve complaints ourselves. Customer service is important for MTA member companies in this competitive world, and that's how we keep our customers. Having the department's phone number and the PUC phone number in our bills will give consumers the false impression that they should start with regulatory agencies instead of trying to resolve issues with their provider. Second, the Department of Commerce and PUC only have jurisdiction over landline telephone service. Most MTA members, if not all, bundle services to the majority of their customers. Internet service and TV services are not regulated by either Commerce or the PUC, and putting their phone numbers creates the false impression that they do have authority over these other services. And finally, our segment is the only industry to be singled out. Telephone service is no longer a monopoly, and consumers have choices. As I'll get into when I testify about our bill, most of our industry is not regulated by the state and will not have to follow this provision. I'm also not aware of any requirement for true utility monopolies, such as electric or gas, to have regulatory phone numbers on their bills. We have had a good dialogue with the Department of Commerce so far on both the bills, and we look forward to that continuing discussion as the committee process moves forward. I'm really here today to talk about Senate File 584. And customers have choices now. Cell phones, voice over internet services like Vonage and Magic Jack, and their traditional landline service, or a combination of any of the above. Several regulatory milestones have led us to this point: the breakup of the original AT&T in 1984, the 1996 Telecom Act, Federal Telecom Act, which focused on creating telecom competition. Most recently, the FCC transformation order in November of 2011, the goal of which was to transform the traditional telephone network to an internet protocol or IP network. Unfortunately, Minnesota regulation has not kept up with these changes. The last major changes to state telecom regulation was in 1995. Now think back to your own telephone usage and how that's changed since 1995. Back then, cell phones couldn't fit in your pocket. There was no broadband. And no one I knew would ever put the word smart and phone together in a sentence. The FCC's transformation order basically dictates local service rates and state access rates, what telephone companies charge one another to terminate calls from one point to the state to the other. These are charges that used to be controlled by the PUC and the Department of Commerce. Now, like many of you, I've got a smartphone, and I have three telephone numbers that come to this smartphone. I have my home phone number through an analog telephone adapter at my house, rings here. I've got my cell number, and I have a VoIP number. All three of them are regulated completely different. My landline service is regulated by the Department of Public Safety or Department of Commerce, Public Utilities Commission, and the Office of the Attorney General, and the FCC. My cellular service is regulated by the FCC, and my voice over internet service isn't regulated by anybody. We need to get regulations in line with the service and not how it's delivered. 584 is a continuation of a process that started last year. And we've had meetings with several stakeholders, everyone that we could think of, to talk about the state regulatory environment and not only the current the industry as it is to exist, but how consumers will be served for years to come. Ultimately, our goal is to benefit consumers by providing flexibility for providers to meet consumer needs, ensuring consumer protection currently in statute remains intact, such as slamming and cramming laws, maintain basic service regulation for those folks who just want plain old telephone service, maintain oversight over wholesale relationships between incumbent carriers and competitors. And this bill, our bill, asks for VoIP providers to register with the state for purposes of collecting 911, TAP, TAM, and other state programs. There is no intent to assert state regulation, merely an effort to obtain information and the method of these VoIP service providers to participate in those programs. And we're looking for something that works. We have worked with interested stakeholders from state legislators to other industry segments and consumer groups, and this bill reflects a lot of those discussions that we've had towards a goal of consensus. Obviously, we didn't reach consensus on every issue, but we believe that the bill is fair, balanced, and reflects the telecom industry as it exists today. Minnesota is slipping behind the curve. Several other states have already enacted legislation to keep up with the changes in technology and federal regulation, including a number of our neighboring states. I really appreciate the opportunity to come here today. I appreciate the opportunity to hear both of these bills together. I think there's a good opportunity for us to work with Commerce on these two bills and come up with something that's going to work for everybody, ultimately the consumers of Minnesota. And with that, I would stand for any questions.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Christensen. I know that you guys have all been working hard. I would agree that I think that would be our goal, too, is if we can come to an agreement and move something forward yet in this session. Any questions for Mr. Christensen on this bill or the previous bill? Okay. Thank you very much. I know there's a few other people that like to be heard on these bills, and so I'd ask them to come forward. Mr. Elwood and Mr. Mendoza, if you want to come up, or Ms. Well, that's fine. She can come. That's okay.
Can we actually? We had three from the consumer.
Yep.
Folks,
go ahead. That's fine.
Our coalition,
Mr. Elwood,
Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid, and to continue the riff on the temperature, I'll assume that if anybody keels over, it won't be because I'm incredibly boring. So I'm here today representing the Telecommunications Consumer, Competitor, and Small Business Coalition, which was actually formed in response to Senate File 584. It consists of Legal Aid, AARP, the Competitive Local Exchange Carrier Coalition, the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, the Community Action Partnership, and the Metropolitan Independent Business Alliance. We agree with Commissioner Rothman that modernization and deregulation are not synonymous. We also agree that investment in infrastructure is something that's sorely needed, and we applaud Senator Schmidt and all of you for your work on that in that area. It's very important. But we do not believe that regulation is impeding investment or that deregulation will automatically spur that investment. We respectfully oppose the MTA CenturyLink deregulation bill. We believe a number of provisions in it threaten consumer and competitive protections that are currently in place. We have met with MTA and CenturyLink several times, and we have agreed on the unsession repeals that will be coming forward in your bill. But we are far apart on other aspects of that bill. We applaud the Department of Commerce's efforts to advance consumer and competitive protections, and we look forward to working with all the stakeholders as this moves forward. We just have a couple more folks. Is Mr. Phillips still here? You want to come on down?
Mr. Phillips, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Will Phillips, and I'm the new state director for AARP Minnesota. It's good to be here with you today. On behalf of our 650,000-plus members in the state, AARP appreciates the opportunity to express our concerns with Senate File 584, which seeks to further deregulate telecommunications services in Minnesota. AARP's policies fully support the transition to state-of-the-art telecommunications networks, technological innovation, and economic development, and we're hopeful that all citizens will be able to benefit from these advancements. However, this will not be able to happen if such services are priced beyond the means of average citizens or beyond the accountability of consumer protections designed to provide all citizens with access to essential telecommunications services. Senate File 584 would raise new and unnecessary risks for Minnesota consumers, that is our belief, and if enacted, among other things, the bill would effectively eliminate any meaningful oversight of the telecommunications industry in Minnesota. It would end the Public Utilities Commission's authority over retail telecommunications services additionally. As you know, Minnesota has millions of people living throughout the state who rely on phone service to meet their basic needs on a daily basis. Telephone communications is a basic necessity that allows older people in particular to maintain social contact, preserve health and safety, and gain assistance in an emergency when necessary. And this, as you know, is especially critical in rural parts of the state. But again, our concern is that the reliability of the state's telecommunication infrastructure, again, is essential to the elderly wherever they live. AARP is hopeful, again, that all citizens will be able to partake in the benefits that advancements in telecommunication services make possible. We realize that all the folks that have come to this table are interested in that. However, we cannot ignore the risk of leaving rural Minnesotans out of this equation by losing access to reliable, affordable, and basic phone service, including 911 emergency service. So in conclusion, we stand ready and willing to work with lawmakers and other interested in parties to update Minnesota's current statutes with the possibility of reducing regulation in a careful, balanced, transparent manner that will continue to foster competition and, most importantly, protect consumers. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Phillips, and obviously appreciate your testimony, and we'll certainly keep your concerns in mind moving forward. Ms. Heston, would you like to go ahead?
Thank you, Chair, committee members. Donna Heaston with Integra. We are a competitive local exchange carrier. And so as part of this consumer competitor small business coalition, really as a coalition, we are naturally aligned because we are all customers of the ILEX and all rely on the state's authority to protect our interests and that relationship. And so our concern with the MTA deregulation bill is really that it could seriously undermine that authority and with that then seriously erode or even in some cases eliminate consumer choice and competition. And so we talk about technological change, and really that's nothing new to our industry. And in fact, competitive local exchange carriers are often among the drivers of that change. And so we fully support that. However, absent meaningful, reasonable oversight and a very thoughtful approach to changes in telecommunications regulation, this industry will trend toward consolidation and away from competition and consumer choice.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any question, members, for the coalition? But I appreciate you guys taking the time to be here today, and I obviously value your input.
Thank you. Thank you, members.
Mr. Bagnoli, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli with McGranchier Law Firm on behalf of Sprint. I just had a chance to talk with, Commissioner Rothman about this. We've been relatively busy, so we haven't had as much time to talk to the department as we would have liked. There's a concern, though, that the definition in the department's bill of telecommunications service provider on 2.13 to 2.17 includes or any other telecommunications service that provides a customer with the ability to originate or terminate calls, that would include wireless providers. Wireless providers, as Mr. Christensen just indicated, are largely governed by the FCC. There are other provisions in Section 16 where it specifically talks about rates. Those are specifically carved out by under the jurisdiction of the federal law. And so there's some concern. We're not sure, again, because we haven't had as much time to actually have conversations that either through inadvertence or perhaps through intentionality that there's an attempt to cover wireless providers. We're working through with our companies on whether or not this is an issue within this bill or not. But I just wanted to not miss the opportunity to raise a potential issue. Hopefully it's not. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bagnoli. The last testifier I had was Mr. Mendoza. If you'd like to come forward, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Senators. My name is Tony Mendoza. I'm outside counsel to the Minnesota Cable Communications Association. And I'd like to make a very brief comments on both the department's bill and the Minnesota Telecom Alliance bill. We are fully supportive of modernizing Chapter 237. We understand that there needs to be some updating, and there is some antiquated language and provisions in that law, in that chapter of law. However, we do have questions about both of the bills. We have had an opportunity to talk with the Minnesota Telecom Alliance about their bill, and we continue to be open to continuing to discuss our questions about the bill. Particularly, we're mostly concerned about making sure that wholesale services remain with some oversight through the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission to make sure that there is seamless interconnection between competitive local exchange carriers, incumbent local exchange carriers, and cable companies like the ones we represent here in Minnesota. So we'll continue to work with MTA on that. And on the department's bill, I just wanted to address quickly the call completion issue. As you may know, the FCC has just implemented a new order which requires a massive data collection process for long-distance carriers and originating carriers to try to get to the root cause of this call completion issue. I don't think there is really quite an understanding yet of why this problem is occurring. The Minnesota Public Utilities Commission also has an ongoing docket on that issue, and we're participating in that docket that was initiated by the department. So I guess from our perspective, we feel it may be a bit premature to begin legislating or considering legislation that addresses that until those two investigations have an opportunity to play out. They're very new, and they're in the early stages of both. So with that, I will not keep you here any longer and conclude. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mendoza. Would anyone else like to be heard? We have a few more minutes. Otherwise, that's the end of the testifiers that I have from today, sir. We have this room until 5 o'clock, so welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lyle Williamson. I'm a regional director for Verizon. And actually, in prior lives, I was back here on previous regulatory reform efforts. At that point, for a company some of you might remember, MCI. But MCI having been bought by Verizon a couple of years ago, and I guess needing some continuing policy efforts have allowed me to continue this. So it's kind of fun to be back here with some old friends. Earlier discussion that from the task force, again, gave me great hope and could allow me to set aside a lot of what I might have said with this committee, to this committee, about the transformative nature of wireless and IP connectivity and the networks that are being built in the state of Minnesota today. Verizon is one of the major investors here in the state of Minnesota. I was very happy to see on this list of action items, hopefully for you folks, would be restoration of the exemption for sales tax, because it's one of the things you folks can do on the policy front that will help us invest more in this state. I can say to you, our investment has been significant, and we like to think the competitive forces have been unleashed in Minnesota as well as other states in a manner that, investment is going quite well. Our 4G LTE network covers pretty much the whole state, and even the discussion from The Economist, to remind you of that real briefly, to indicate filling holes for ourselves, if it would be, covering areas better where we've already introduced 4G LTE, that's what we're about now, because we're around 98% of your population with 4G LTE coverage. So having said that, we have concerns about both of these bills that I just want to touch very briefly. We've had discussions with MTA about that from the wireless perspective. We have concerns about both bills and their definitions and how broad they may be, as represented by Sprint, that they could be including much more than is intended. So we certainly hope that given our history with light regulatory oversight of wireless and internet investment across this state, that we would maintain that and not bring in more regulatory oversight, which is our biggest concern about the department's bill. So the way we define telecommunications services provider, as mentioned already, is of great concern to us, and we can't imagine that you would want to do more expansive regulation at this point. I spent last session here in Kansas, which was a successful example of many of the same companies coming together, working together to reform legacy regulations in telephone, and passing two bills and making Kansas the 25th state, I believe, that has totally preempted IP interconnection and IP-enabled services. So we'd like to think Minnesota could be the 26th to be in line with clarifying no regulation on those services that are being invested so significantly and bringing broadband to the state of Minnesota. So I'll pause with that. Just want to make a couple of points with you today here late in the day. I thank you for the opportunity, and to spend this summer day with you was delightful.
Thank you, Mr. Williamson, for your comments. And I just want to thank members for being so engaged today. As you can see, these are some pretty complex and complicated issues, but I think you guys were all engaged, and I think together we'll continue to keep working, and hopefully we can come to some kind of an agreement here. So with that, thank you, members, and meeting's adjourned.